Hey everybody, Nate here. Before the show, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, the Snack Nanny. The Snack Nanny is the latest, greatest spill-proof bowl. It's the first snack bowl for kids with a self-closing door. The Snack Nanny allows kids to snack freely without overeating, keeps kids entertained, and prevents them from creating a mess for mom and dad to clean up. Kids and parents love the Snack Nanny. It's easy to use, easy to clean, and includes portion control features that only the Snack Nanny offers. To order, go to www.snacknanny.com. or order from Amazon. Remember, you support our sponsors and they support us. Thanks and Nihei Debiru. Hi everyone and welcome back to Chop Talk. I'm your host, Nate England. If you listen to the show on iTunes, please write a review and give us a 5-star rating. Also, don't forget to like the show on Facebook. This week's guest is Bob Voles, a longtime student of Shuriru Chief Instructor Mike Awad and co-owner, along with David Hammond and myself, of the Kosho School of Karate in Cincinnati, Ohio. Mr. Voles has been studying karate for almost 40 years and is a part of Sensei Awad's dojo, had a chance to train under some of the best karate men of the era, including Robert Trias, Phil Keppel, James McLean, Ross Scott, Bill Superfoot Wallace, and many more. He is also an avid art and antique collector and has an impressive vintage motorcycle collection. Mr. Voles is also known as a top-notch instructor with impeccable basics and a stickler for details. To find out more about Mr. Voles and the Kosho School of Karate, visit www.koshoschoolofkarate.com or visit the school's page on Facebook.
All right, ready, go.
You could start your shows with that.
I could. Yeah. I just don't know where to have their headphones on too loud when you pulled it.
So here we are.
Here we are. I'm sitting here with Bob Voles, who started his karate career in... When did you start?
Late 1975.
All right. How'd you start?
Well, went to high school with two guys. Marco Sastry.
Okay.
Michael Davis.
Okay.
Who had started before me. Probably about 3 months, 4 months before me.
Okay.
We knew the Awads through school, high school. And
y'all grew up in the same part of Cincinnati.
Yeah. Forestville, Anderson area, mm-hmm. You know, and those guys have been working out in karate, and I knew the Awads, and they're like, oh, every time I see them, you gotta come work out with us. So finally I did, late 1975. Their dojo was two car garage at their parents' house.
Okay.
You know, and they had two big, huge, great Doberman Pinschers, a red one and a black one, mm-hmm. and the red one was like the biggest chested thing you ever seen. You go over there for class and you'd be walking down their driveway and hear these two dogs would just be running at you. Ah, you're like, you know, hickory, you know, and they were good dogs. But I mean, it was kind of intimidating, you know.
So they run off anybody who they hadn't invited to class. Did they get to know you? So you'd stick your hand out? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, they were good. Since they always tell you, you got to yell at them. You know, you'd yell their names at them, and then they would. But I mean, you know, hell, Hickory had a 48-inch chest. You know,
wow.
It's like when that sucker's running at you, you know, you better yell at it. You know,
or you just gotta start running the other direction.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You don't want to do that. That dog would take you down.
Yeah.
So, but they were cool. They just were showing their badass. You know. Mm-hmm. And then we'd go. They had their two-car garage with a wood deck in there, and gosh, back then, you know, Sensei was training.
Mm-hmm.
He was competing all over the place.
Well, sure, he's traveling all over the U.S.
Oh, no doubt. And I mean, he needed people to, you know,
practice against.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we were meat for him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he taught us very well, and a whole big part of our learning was, you know, our stances, our technique, or strikes. Mm-hmm. Okay, guys, it's time to spar. Mm-hmm. You know, he needed, you know.
You're going
to
spar at the end of every class.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that was a given. And because he needed his timing and his, mm-hmm. you know, it's what it's all about. And
it goes. If you don't spar for a little while, I mean, sparred for a couple of weeks, and then we did it on Saturday, and all of a sudden, it's your timing's a little bit off, your distance is a little bit off, you need to do it regularly.
In 2 weeks, even if you're in your best training, in 2 weeks, you lose your timing.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody's watching you, and you're out there punching or kicking somebody, they're looking like, wow, you got that right in there. Mm-hmm. But you yourself can feel that,
right?
Wow. That wasn't real solid.
Right.
You know, it's not detectable, but it is by your mind. Because you go, wow, it just wasn't there. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and you can lose it that quick in 2 weeks. It's, you wouldn't think so, but you can. Right. You know, but then again, you can also take a month off or 6 weeks off and come back and work out and spar and just be hitting it. It's
unpredictable.
Yeah, it's a wacky thing, but yeah, when you're in good training, you lose your timing in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. That's a given. And well, we worked out back then, and we'd have Sensei McLean would come up to their home. Mm-hmm. Sensei's parents, you know, they all knew him, and I mean, we were fortunate. We had Master Trius would come there too. I mean, right there to their house where we worked out.
To the garage.
To the garage, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that was Sensei's dojo, you know. And Sensei would leave. He'd go out there to finish. He'd go out there and work out Master Trius. And I mean, there were times he was gone for a while. But when he was in town, it was training time. And we worked out a lot. It took us... We worked out for 2 years to get our yellow belts.
Wow.
2 years. I mean, it's like, not that we really cared because we didn't, it was all new to us. We just thought, I guess you're supposed to work out for 2 years to get your yellow belt. You know what I mean? It was always like, yeah, you guys are going to be promoted. You're going to be promoted, you know. We're gonna do it. We'll do it next month. And then it would be like 5 months later, yeah, we're going to do it next month. I mean, he was a busy man, you know.
Right, and then next month never came.
Yeah, yeah. And then Sensei McLean would come, and we'd do stuff, and Master Trius would come, and then it was like, finally, after 2 years, okay, we're going to do a yellow belt promotion.
Wow.
We're like, oh, my gosh, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, at that time, we were tuned up. We were great fighters, you mm-hmm. know, and everything we did was... What's right, you know, good stances, good form, everything, because that's the way Sensei taught.
Right.
Bottom line.
Looking for a way to gain an edge on the competition? Want to give your body some much-needed relief and relaxation? Try Medical Resort ATEC, Okinawa's specialist in sports therapy and wellness care. ATEC offers customizable massage therapy. Try their oxygen chamber for increased metabolism and faster recovery from injuries. Or take their stretching course to improve flexibility. ATEC is used by professional athletes from the Ryukyu Golden Kings, FC Ryukyu, and Ryukyu Corazon. Stop into their center Monday through Saturday at 12830 Oroku in Naha City, Okinawa. Call 098-859-1890 or visit them on the web at www.sanso-atac.com. That's www.sanso-atac.com.
And it'd chew your ass out even when you thought you were doing good, you know. So we did that, and Sensei McLean and Master Trius, I mean, they're there for your yellow belt promotion.
Wow.
I mean, how awesome is that?
Yeah.
You know, we had met them a number of times, but I mean, it was a big deal, you know, how promotions
are. Yeah, sure. So the head of the style, the highest rank in USK, the country, your teachers,
Master Trius, you know. So, and Sensei being a chief instructor, I mean, it's like, wow, you know, I mean, this is all pretty awesome and intimidating.
Sure.
And, you know, but it was really them being so close to the family and the parents, you know. Now, this promotion was a big, big, big deal. You know, they rented a big hall at the country club, and I mean, this was a real big deal. We had a ceremony afterwards.
Really?
You know, oh, yeah, big banquet and... A very big deal. And Sensei trained hard, and he always, not so much in the very beginning, but once we started, after we were promoted and finally moved on to the Sherman School, which was their first new, their first dojo out of their home.
Okay.
You know, that was a huge deal.
So how many people that had started with you early on? You said Davis, Sastry. There's a group of you guys that wound up all making black belt together, and a lot of them are still working out
right
today.
Well,
out of that small
group. Out of that small group. I mean, there were like 7 or 8 of us, you know, and a lot of them over the couple years would be there, and then they'd be gone. But we were pretty tight. We were pretty tight for a couple years. But basically, really, the main guys out there was, you know, Marco Sastry and Michael Davis and myself. We got our ranks as black belts together. Mm-hmm. You know, we were the only 3 out of all those people that got our Udonchi rank together.
And so Grandmaster Trius, he was there not just for your yellow belt promotion, but also the black belt.
He was there for our black belt promotion, absolutely. And he had been there for other promotions as well, which was, I mean, how fortunate is that?
You know? Yeah, it's unbelievable.
It was a beautiful thing. I mean, for as many times as he has been here to Cincinnati is a pretty amazing deal.
Sure.
Know? And Sensei McLean was always periodically coming in and out. And Ross Scott, which was, you know, a badass, wild, you know, kickboxing karate man, you
right.
know. And you never knew when you heard Mr. Scott was coming to town. You never knew if he was going to be, like, really hot in shape or if he's going to be in partying mode.
Okay.
I mean, bottom line.
It was one
know,
or the other,
yeah.
from what I've heard.
Oh,
right?
It was absolutely one or the other. There was no medium deal. It was, you know, he's either here to, he's partying or he's in shape and he's just amazing.
So when he was in, when he was in shape, what it was like? What was it like working out with him?
Unbelievable. I mean, that man could come in and not just foot sweep you. He would foot sweep both your feet out from under you. I mean, he was just amazing. And I mean, his hands were so huge. I mean, he would just, you know, he'd get you to hold a bag. Here, hold a bag. I want to demonstrate this for somebody.
Uh-huh.
And if he hit you, I mean, he would knock you off the deck. And if he kicked you, forget it. You were like gone, gone, gone. The guy was a really good karate man. I mean, bottom line, he got into the kickboxing aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And was a badass, no doubt about it. But there were times when he wasn't. Like, you know, karate careers, let's face it, you know. Some years you work out more than others, you know. And there's injuries involved and stuff like that. But, yeah.
So when he was in the party mode, what was that like?
Well, sometimes you had to be on top of your game when you knew he was in the party mode, because I mean, you didn't know what you were going to get into.
Okay.
I mean, you go out in the public, you know, I mean, he might just go off and, you know, shit's coming down, you know.
Right.
Actually a pretty mellow dude, but he could be not so mellow as well. But when he was on top of his karate game, you could totally respect him, and and he could teach you well. It was an honor to work out with him.
Sure.
You know.
Sure.
And then there were the other times when it's, you know, maybe it was an honor to party with him, you know. But it was good. It was real good to be in with him.
It was a different,
you know,
kind
I mean?
Of fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't want to be on the wrong side of him, whichever mode he was in.
No, and we all knew we were in.
Right.
No matter what game he was playing. Right. You know, he respected Sensei's students, and we all knew him well. And he liked us, you know. So we were good. It's just, you know, the people they didn't know. You know?
Right.
It's like, where's this going to go? You know? So, which happened often. And Sensei was like that too.
Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks. Remember, if you have an upcoming seminar, tournament, or other martial arts event, let us know, and we'd be happy to announce it on the program. And now, back to the show.
Yeah, how's that?
I mean, Sensei would... Sensei
must have been out with him, because there's a lot of stories. I know in one of the previous episodes, he told a couple of them that maybe people can go back and listen to. But you were a firsthand witness to some of his...
Plenty of them. I mean, you know, Sensei was... we worked out with Sensei, and we worked out hard. And our Sherman School, which was their first dojo out of their home, mm-hmm. I mean, you know... I was yellow belt and then blue belt, and we were teaching. I mean, we were teaching, and we worked out 3-4 days a week. We had to, you know, and plus our teaching. You know, we had enough students there where you only had to teach once a week, but you had to work out minimum of 3.
Okay, the other when you weren't teaching, you were working out.
Oh, yeah. Or the night you were teaching, there was a workout after that for the advanced. Mm-hmm. And it was like, we worked out hard. And I mean, you go through a class and think you're doing great, and you're freaking wore out. I mean, 2-hour class, 2.5-hour class, working out hard. Sensei go, okay, everybody line up, and then he chew your ass out, telling you all the shit you didn't do right.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking, okay, good, okay, we're done. We're gonna hang out. We're gonna drink some beers and chill.
Yeah.
And he go, okay, everybody line up, okay. You're thinking you're going to bow out.
Uh-huh.
Okay, guys, go get your gear on. And it's like, ah, you know? And then he'd go, well, go on. And he'd be yelling at you while you're getting your gear on. Hurry up, you know, and on your ass. And your ass is done kicked, you know?
Right.
And back then, we'd do 3-minute rounds.
Okay.
I mean, that.
Yeah, that'll
3-minute rounds are, in the end, when you're in shape, whether it's a 3-minute round, 2-minute round, or 1-minute round. It's all the same if you're in shape. It's all in what you're geared for.
Right.
And it doesn't matter if it's a 1, 2, or 3-minute round. The first 3 are horrible. You're sucking air. The fourth one, I got through that one. By the 5th round, you got your breath. You're all breathing under control. So it's good. At that point, you can do 18 3-minute rounds. It doesn't matter. But
okay.
You got to get to the 5th round.
Okay.
Then you're. That's how we were trained.
All right. It's kind of like running a marathon. You got to get the first few miles under your belt.
Yeah. Once you get the breath down, you're good. You can go because you were conditioned and you could go. So, but the good part about all that was, you know, afterwards, I mean, socially wise, it was like, okay, you sparred. You know, some guys had busted lips, black eyes, and bloody noses. That's just the way it was. But it was always respectfully done, and too hard, sorry about that. And then it's like, you know, you didn't care, you know, because you
the tried. Next week he might have one.
Yeah,
you might give that guy one.
Yeah,
also.
You know, I mean, chemo's important, but you know, stuff happens. But then after that, you know, hell, 3 hours, you know, it's like, you know, okay, we're done, we bow out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, Sensei had send somebody down the road, get some beer, you know. It was social. After that, we were in the beer mode. We'd sit and drink and laugh and talk, and it was awesome, you know. And then that's kind of the way those guys always rolled. I mean, you know, it was usually social and refreshments afterwards.
Okay.
You know? Some of the guys didn't drink. Yeah. They would drink pops, you know, whatever. I tried that before, but it didn't work out too good for me. I mean, beer worked better for me than pops, you know.
Yeah.
But we trained hard. And you know, with the AWADS, it was, we were always doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. Great instructors. Hard-ass fighters. I mean, bottom line. I mean, they were known for their kumite and great karate man.
Sure.
Good kata man.
How about some of the other guys that came through the dojo? Because I know they brought, Sensei Awad brought a lot of different people in to teach seminars, where you already mentioned Grandmaster Trias, Sensei McLean. I mean, Master Keppel was there. Bill Wallace was there. And a fair number of other pretty well-known karate guys. Anybody else who passed through town that was kind of...
Well, mainly, you know, like you said, Bill Wallace, Superfoot Wallace. His seminar, he was at our dojo where we're at now.
Okay.
On Beachmont.
So it moved to the current location in what, 1983?
I think it was 80, maybe 82.
Okay.
It should be up there above the door. It used to be in there. It was early 80s, yeah. Mm-hmm. 82, 83, I think, when we moved to Beachmont where we're at now. Yeah, Bill Wallace was there, Master Trias, Master Keppel, Sensei McLean a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were other karate men from mm-hmm. Keppel organization there a number of times. Mr. Bowles has been down there.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's one thing, every time that I talk to people about what's going on with the dojo down here, okay, well... Dave Hammond is, you know, the head of the school now, and, you know, and we all three bought it together, myself, Dave Hammond, and Bob Bowles. Bob Bowles from Indiana bought a school, and I'm like, no, not Bob Bowles,
exactly.
Bob Bowles. Yeah. That's what they said, Bob Bowles.
That's what Master Trias would say that every time. Mm-hmm. Every single time we'd be at a promotion or something, Master Trias was there. He was there for many, so we're so lucky to have that. And whenever Sensei'd say, Bob Bowles, come up here, Master Trias would go, Bob Bowles? Every time. He did that for, you know, decades. It's like, Bob Bowles? It's like, hey, Master Trias, Bob Bowles. And Sensei'd always go, no, Bob Bowles. Yeah, it's kind of like Bob Bowles, but no, this is Bob Bowles, my student, Sensei. You know, always Bob Bowles. So it was amazing. It was kind of a humorous thing, mm-hmm. actually. And it always happened that way every time.
I still have to explain it to people. When I tell everyone what's going on in Cincinnati, right. I still have to explain it to them.
Yeah, I don't know why that is, but it's close enough.
It's close enough that you hear the V or the B.
Yeah, it fools everybody.
Right.
You know, and a pretty unlikely match there. You know, Mr. Bowles and Sensei Awad, Michael E. Awad. That probably wouldn't. You know, I mean, his students have always been awesome.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt, but...
Looking for great entertainment? Want to find the best deals on food and drinks? Use the PubPal app to find great establishments near you. View daily specials, find live bands, karaoke, even poetry. If you're looking for something to do, PubPal is the answer, and it's only a click away. Download the app on the Apple Store and get the Android app on Google Play. And don't forget to like them on Facebook. Visit PubPalUSA.com to find out more. That's PubPalUSA. PubPalUSA.
Now, did you get into the tournament circuit very much back in the 70s or 80s? That really wasn't so much your thing.
No, not so much. I did tournament play, you know. Master Dimitri, as a matter of fact. You know, we would go to his tournaments.
Okay.
You know?
But that's locally here in Cincinnati.
Yeah, it's locally. Yeah. I fought in his tournaments. I fought some other tournaments downtown, which I like sparring in the tournaments more than the kata aspect.
Yeah.
But any tournaments we ever went to, I mean, of course, by the time you're black belt, you know, they need judges, you know.
Sure.
And as far as fun, I mean, going to tournaments, judging kumite is more fun than sitting there with a group of guys, you know, judging kata, in my opinion.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's all on what you're into.
Mm-hmm.
I like sparring better. I like judging kumite. It's just that's the way I like doing it. You know, you get into kata, it's a whole different aspect. You know, hey, write down your number. This guy gets a 7. You know, I mean, katas. You know, you're getting so many different styles in there. If you if you don't know the kata the man's running,
okay,
you know, you're looking at his stances, his...
You're looking at the basics, the fundamentals.
Exactly.
Well, that's one thing that I've noticed about your teaching is you're so focused on the fundamentals, making sure that everybody's stance is exactly right, their blocks are exactly right. And I know you're going to say that everybody that should be that way, but I think you emphasize it a little bit more than most.
Well, I try to because, I mean, it's basic. It's the basics. You know, I mean, you know, the stances. And there's not, like, tons of stances. I mean, it's either... You know, you're working a Zen Kutsudachi, you know, you work thrust stuff out of that. You're working with Serendachi, you know, that snap stuff. Your Kibidachis. I mean, there's three basic stances right there that it you have to have that stance, forward thrust of the hip, boom, you're sliding in with your reverse punches. You got to be able to move. Your stance has got to be right. It's got to be moving in a positive direction. And you'll see high ranks that just they're not always doing that.
Right.
It's like, and it's so simple. That's the basics. People, once they start getting advanced, if they don't have their basics drilled into them, then they get sloppy.
You know, one of the things that I found when this is when I was living in Japan in Okinawa was that you're going to work on this Kibidachi. And if you don't get the Kibidachi down, we're just not going to teach you anything else.
Yeah.
I don't know that you could do that here in the U.S. and keep your students or the school, you know, just, okay, you go over here and work on the stance. And until they got the stance down,
right.
Well, there's no point in teaching you anything else because you can't even stand right.
Right. Well, yeah. I think they have it down. That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
You know? But I mean, it's so minimal on your stances, on your basic stances. It's so minimal that, I mean, you do that thousands and thousands of time. How can you not do it right? You know? I mean, it's pretty simple. I think people try to advance too quick.
Okay.
The bottom line, that's it. You know, and
well, I've noticed that people always they've worked a kata, they learned a kata, they've worked it for 2 or 3 weeks. Okay, I know it. I know it. I'm ready for the next one.
Exactly.
And you got to tell them, no, you got to slow down.
Right.
Work this 3,000 or 4,000 times.
Exactly. Yeah. And if they're not, they'll run through a kata and they'll have no breath. It's the weakest daggone thing. And I know, you know it, teaching it right now. Every time I take somebody through a kata, I don't care if it's by the count or all the way through it. If I let them do it by themselves, and I just do it by the count, or I say, okay, by one count, just go all the way through the kata. They go through the moves. They don't put anything into it.
Yeah.
They don't have their breath. They don't lock in. And every time I do that, it's like, okay, I'm going to do it with you. And then whether I do it by the count with them or go all the way through it, then they start breathing. Because you, as the instructor, are doing it properly and right. You know.
They're able to see that example and follow along. And
yeah. But then the next week you'll do it again. And it's like, you guys are not breathing. No power. What are you doing? You know, you have to, that's where, you know, as an instructor, you have to jump in there and run them through it. And
show them how it's done.
Yeah, 3-4 times.
Right.
But they're instantly into it when you're doing it with them.
Right.
Which is... Now, why is that? Why can't they do that alone? You know, I don't get why. Yeah. But
neither do I. But that's where we got to get them. We got to get them all to the point where they can just come out and run it all the
right.
way through.
And you know, the main thing is we have to teach them guys to teach like that. They have to be aware that, okay, these guys are just not quite breathing right. They're not locking into it. So the new guys as instructors have to get in there and roll through it and get them going.
Right.
So that's the bottom line.
That's an important thing for somebody who's coming up, who's had a little bit of experience to start teaching and being in charge of the groups.
Right.
And that's I found that you really learn a lot from teaching people that you wouldn't have even thought of if you're on the student side.
Absolutely. That's why these guys when they're blue belts, green belts, they have to be assistant instructors. That's a big part of karate. You can learn karate, but if you can't teach karate, you know, how well did you learn it? You know, so it's real important for the future of karate anyway.
Yeah, because if you can't teach it, that's it. Maybe you can demonstrate real well, but you'll be the last one.
And unfortunately, there's black belts out there that can't teach a class.
Yeah.
I mean, in lots of systems. But that's just an unfortunate thing because they never had the opportunity to teach. And you learn that early in the game. You know, you get over the nervousness of trying to, you know, instruct a class. And it's all down to the basics. I don't care what rank class you're teaching. You can be teaching black belts. And if they're kibudachis and they're Zenkutsu dachis and Mitsurin dachis suck, then it's like, wow, you know, you got some work to do, you know? So, what you do, you know?
Right.
That's all for the first half of my interview with Bob Voles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Remember, to find out more about Mr. Voles and the Kosho School of Karate in Cincinnati, visit www.koshoschoolofkarate.com or visit the school's page on Facebook. Thanks, and we'll see you next week. Nihidibiru and Mataya. Everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.